Ben, we're on. Today's guest, we've got boxer Andy Flute. How are you, brother?
I'm good, thank you.
Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yeah, likewise. And you sent me your book many months ago, gave it a read.
Yeah.
Great book.
Yeah.
A man who turned professional, but his real battle was with alcohol.
Addiction.
Yeah, addiction issues.
Yeah.
But today you're here to tell your story, brother.
Yeah,
yeah. In a positive light, how you've changed your life. So first of all, well done.
Thank you.
How have you been?
I've been really good. Really good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good, man. But you're looking well.
Yeah, I'm fit. I'm good. Everything's all right, man.
Yeah, good.
You know what I mean?
As you know, I always go back to the start of my guests.
Yeah.
Where you grew up and how it all began.
Mm. Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a place called Cowsley in the West Midlands. I had a good childhood. You know, it was good. You know what I mean? My dad had got a scrap business, you know, horses and stuff, you know. I was never wanted to go to school. Naughty.
Nah.
Terrible naughty, you know. But I was going to work with my dad, you know, and I never wanted to go to school because I wasn't interested in school, you know. And my dad took me to a boxing gym when I was a young lad, 3 years of age. And my dad was a boxer, my uncle was a boxer, my brother was a boxer. So, you know, I'm going to look at the boxing, and I started hanging around the gyms, you know. But I just hated going to school, you know. I just always wanted to be my dad. My dad was my hero sort of thing, you know. And he was a tough bloke himself, you know, and he come from a tough family of fighters, you know. But, childhood was good.
Yeah.
You
know. Was your dad a fighter?
Yeah, that's what I said. My dad was a boxer. He took me to the gym.
Yeah, pro?
Yeah, my uncle was a pro boxer as well.
So it's in the blood then, the family blood?
Yeah. You know.
Were you the youngest?
Yeah, I was the youngest.
How was that?
That was good. My mum treated me the baby, you know, and the family. You know what I mean? But it was good. You know, I can't complain. I had a good childhood. You know what I mean?
How was schooling?
I hated school. I got expelled from school after.
What age?
When I was 16, just before I took my exams, and then I never took my exams. They had enough of me. They sent me home.
What for?
Just being naughty. I locked the blokes in the boiler house, and they liked staying there overnight. You know, I was naughty at school, you know.
When did you get your first fight, amateur?
I had my first amateur fight when I was 11 years of age. I hung around the gyms, just learning. And I was going to the professional gyms as well because my dad and my uncle. So I was watching like good pros, you know, as well. But I had my first amateur fight when I was 11 years of age. A chap named Paul Flood, he'd had 5 and won 4. But I beat him easy enough, unanimous decision at the Park Hall Hotel in Wolverhampton. You know, and I got the ties for it then, you know. But, I wanted more.
Yeah. Did you like fighting? Did you like being in the ring?
Yeah, my first fight was an hard fight for my first fight, to be honest. But my second fight, I stopped the kid in the second round. And, I just kept punching his head till he went through the ropes and the referee had to stop me, you know, because I could smell blood. And I was always taught by my dad to be here, to not be, as the referee tells you, defend yourself at all times. But my dad always told me, you know, it's hit or be it. You know, it's hit or be it. And I had that killer instinct from a young age.
So you always wanted to go for the knockout punch?
Yeah. I could take a punch. I always wanted to cause as much damage as I can. I believe pain is better than points in boxing. Yeah.
So you're looking out to be ruthless, no matter how you win?
Yeah, my dad used to say, you got to win by hook or by crook. You know, my dad, because I was strong, my dad used to say to me, make sure you put it on him in the first round, you know.
So your dad was a tough man straight away, learning you the ropes to go and take no prisoners kind of mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was your idol when you were younger, boxing-wise?
I never really had one, to be honest. I've got to be straight. People ask me that. I never really had anybody that I've, you know.
Your dad?
Yeah, only my dad. But, I used to watch tapes of, like, Tony Simpson and stuff like that, Charlie Magri, just to try and improve myself. You know, I used to watch videos of different fighters just to, you know, improve my own style and my own thing.
You know?
But I never really had anybody that I thought, you know, was an idol or anything like that.
How many amateur fights did you have?
I had well over 100. You know, I won about 85%.
And you were captain of England?
I captained the England team a few times. Yeah. I think one of my best victories was when I went to when I went to West Germany and captained the team. The England coach said to me, don't throw all your aces in the first round because he's a good lad who you're fighting. And I thought, no, man. And I steamed out across and I went at him like Lord Hunnigan doing against Maurice Blocker. And I stopped him in the first round. But if I'd have listened to the England coach, you know, whatever, probably had hard fights, or would have let the lad in, you know, or would have loosed him in, you know, let him get warm and, you know, let him feel his way into it. But, you know, my dad told me to hurt him in the first round, and that's what I did. And I see the grimace with the pain, and I hit him a couple of body shots, and I grimaced him, I doubled it up to the head. He was finished, man. That was my best ever performance.
Was that your mentality to go out and try and get a knockout
point?
As quick as possible?
Yeah, yeah.
What did your coach say?
The England coach, he could say nothing, can he? Because we'd won and we beat the
Germans.
You know, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
You know, and I was captain of the team as well. You know, and
was that a proud moment for you?
That was a proud moment. You know, to be the best middleweight in England. You know what I mean? By the time you're 18 years of age, to be the best middleweight in England, the captain of the team, that was an achievement. You know, on its own. And I boxed for England a few times. I knocked the Bulgarian champion out the second round. You know, I fought Raymond Garby, the world number one from Cuba. I lost on a 3-2 decision, but I had to box the day before. You know, boxing for England was an odd assignment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people were saying to me, you might as well turn professional because you're boxing the best in the world as amateur and you ain't getting paid for it. And the one time, I come back from a tournament and I had to get my own train fare home. You know what I mean? So, you know, there were no Sport England then, there were no lottery grants or anything like that, you know. So
just working your way through the ranks, though.
Yeah,
you
know.
It feels as if you're getting used as well at some points if you're not really getting anything from it.
Well, you know, once you box for England 4 or 5 times, there ain't really much else to do, is there? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was told I was picked for the Barcelona Olympics, but I couldn't be bothered to wait about. But I regret that. You know, I do regret that. I wish I would have waited. But,
do you?
Yeah. But I'll tell you, you're young and, you know.
Was that to stay amateur then? So
yeah, to stay
to
amateur. I was picked for the Barcelona Olympics, but I never stayed amateur. I went professional.
What age?
19.
Still young, especially for middleweight.
Two months over my 19th birthday.
Yeah. What was your first pro fight?
First pro fight was against Stinger Mason from the L. Graham camp.
How'd that go?
It was a hard fight. He was a good kid as well. He'd had a few fights already.
Yeah.
And pretty typical Brendan Ingle style, you know, Sheffield style. You know, hands down low, and he was awkward, like, you know. But I won it comfortable enough.
When did you start drinking?
I started drinking to celebrate my amateur fights after, you know, got to about, soon I was old enough to drink. And it was just a normal, you know, because I was winning all my amateur fights. I was celebrating all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I remember once going to the, I went on an England multinationals tournament, and I was captain of the team there, and after the tournament, I got all the lads drunk, to be honest. I wasn't drunk, I was all right, mm-hmm. I could handle it, but all the lads was being sick, and there was all, I had to turn the one over, Tony Costello, I had to turn him over, and, you know, stop him being sick on his own vomit and that, you know. But, you know, it was all right, man.
You know, did you have any family members have any addiction issues or anything?
No, not really.
So you never seen any red flags straight away at such a young age?
My dad was a drinker, but he wasn't an alcoholic, do you know.
Social drinker?
Yeah, you know, but he wasn't an alcoholic, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, but...
Because you see, when you turn pro, that's when you're drinking.
Well, when I first got the taste for alcohol, you know, I liked the taste of it. I liked what it did for me. I liked it. And I liked the taste of beer. You know, a lot of people don't like the taste of beer. I like the taste of beer. And I could drink anything. You know, I liked the taste of it. And, you know, but it, you know, it was only started off just, you know, I was doing my boxing. And it just started off as a celebration drink. And then, you know, it just tend to follow me. My whole career, because I always wanted to have a drink.
A baby.
Mm.
Ever drink before fights?
No, I never did that. But you know, some of the sparring jobs I went on with the world champions and all that. You know, I did get in the ring hungover a few times and stuff like that. You know.
When did you realise your drink was getting out of hand?
To be honest, it took me quite a while. Because I was getting away with it. I was still winning fights.
Still fat, still healthy. Still
and I was still hard. Drinking, yeah. Because I was young. I was young, fit, strong, tough. You know, I was very tough. Never putting off my feet. I used to think I was invincible. Obviously, I wasn't, but I used to think I was because I had that mentality. You know, and I was brought up around a family of fighters. I was in the gym with all professional fighters. And I used to think, you know, I'm the best. You know, and that's the way I thought.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought I could. I really did. I really thought I could do both. Mm-hmm. You know, and
what age did it start taking its toll?
Well, it started to affect my career in my 20s, like when I was, you know, this is weird. Do you know, all through my amateur career, right, I never cut around the eyes, right, but soon I was old enough to start drinking. And when I went into the professional ranks, when I turned professional, my eyes started to cut. Now, I don't know whether that was the drink or what, because it was thinning my blood. I don't know, but I never cut as amateur. But when I started to drink and then I started to fight professionally, I started to cut.
Yeah.
So it's just weird.
Yeah, I think the booze does something. Does something to your mind, but
you know,
it's got to maybe thinning your blood, you say, or weaken your skin.
Yeah.
It must do something.
Yeah. And
noticed that?
Yeah, I noticed it because I thought, well, I've never cut as amateur when I don't drink. Mm-hmm. But now I'm professional and I am drinking and I'm cutting. You know, and it cost me some victories. You know, because like when the referee stops the fight when you because of a cut, you know, it goes down as a loss on your record, and you got to start again.
Because I've seen some of your photos when you cut though. Your face goes all red with blood.
I've had some horrendous cuts, like 16 stitches and stuff. I had to go to Harley Street to have the one done in the middle, otherwise my career would have been over. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had some right bangs. You know,
what was your first loss like?
As a professional, it was a cut eye.
So just stopped.
It was a cut eye in the first round, 60 seconds. I'd have beat the kid easy, no problem. Mm-hmm. It was a walk in the park, to be honest.
How was that for you to take?
But it gutted me because I'd sold a lot of tickets. Cause I was a big ticket seller. I could, you know.
Well late.
A big ticket seller. You know, and I'd do a promotional deal, and I could sell tickets because you know that's how the boxing is today. If you go sell tickets, it's hard work. You know, the promoters don't really want to know you're so much more of an opponent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you need to be able to sell the tickets.
Yeah, a lot of boxers and stuff get used now, don't
they? Yeah, of course they do. Yeah. But, you know, I could sell tickets, I could sell loads, you know, and promoters wanted me. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Because of that as well. And,
what was your best fight?
As an amateur or professional?
Professional.
I'd say against Terry McGee from Belfast. It was a tough fight, man. He'd fought for a European title, and it was a hard fight. It was a bit like a bit of a baptism into the 8-round category, 10-round category, you know. And Robin Reed as well, he was a hard fight because he won the world title after fighting me, Robin Reed. But I took it at 2 weeks' notice, and I drove all the way to Glasgow, jumped out the car, and jumped in the ring with him because when I was on the England team with him, he wore as good as me, and I underrated him. But when I got to Glasgow, he was a different fighter to what he was on the England team. He was well trained and he was sharp and he was strong. So you know, all credit to him. He'd changed and he'd improved.
So he'd been training harder, but you were still training,
I was still drinking and going out and that. And I got the call. They said, "Do you want to fight Robin Reed on the same bill as Nassim Ahmed?" I said, "Yeah, no problem." I said, "How much?" Which I used to say all the while, you know. And I said, "Yeah, I'll do it." You know, and I wore in the condition that I should have been. You know what I mean? I was just sticking over because a lot of fights depend on how fit you are before you agreed. Yeah. You know what I mean? But and I drove all the way to Glasgow as well and jumped out the car and jumped straight in the ring.
Kelvin Hall?
I think it was, yeah. But they offered me to go up the night before, but I thought I don't see the point. I thought I'd just drive up there, beat him, and come back.
Wait, did your passion for the boxing go, or were you just, boxing just to get money to pay for drink?
When I was growing up, I was all right. I was quite successful because we work and stuff like that. Working for my dad, I'd got horses and stuff. I worked in the scrap business. Money was never a problem. I'd always got, you know, all right. One money for drink, it was like, you know, to try and pursue my career, you know what I mean? But obviously when the drink it altered it. Like,
You fought four world champions as well?
Yeah, and I boxed more than that. You know, I've if you can't know Bentley Robert as well, it's like five world champions, you know. But I fought them at short notice, you know. They'd foul me up. I fought Glenn Catley, you know, at a week's notice. You know what I mean? Because I was fearless. I didn't fear anybody. I could hold my own with anybody.
Because you've sparred with the likes of Nigel Benn, Chris Eubank. What were they like?
Nigel Benn was, you know, he was the first top guy, the first world champion I sparred. And it was hard sparring, like, you know, when you're only a young kid. Because I was only about 20, 21. I hadn't been professional young. And sparring Nigel Benn was hard. But, you know, it was worthwhile because I learnt a lot from it. And Chris Eubank, I was later on, I was more an established professional then. I was his main sparring partner on his world tour. But I've got to tell you the truth, I drank every night while I was there with him. You know what I mean? And I could hold my own with him. And honest, he said I was the best sparring partner he'd ever had. And Barry Earn, Eddie Earn's dad, come to the gym to watch me spar. And Chris Eubank, being Chris Eubank, Barry Earn comes down in his limousine and that. and he's going to... And Ronnie Davies, Chris Eubank's trainer, he said Andy Flute's the best sparring partner Chris has ever had, because a lot of Chris used to batter his sparring partners and they used to get sent home. He used to do it on purpose, you know.
Was he ruthless?
Yeah, proper ruthless. And lots of fighters come and they got sent home first day. You know, they couldn't stick it. And if you could stick it, you got to go. And that was simple as that. And you get somebody in who can do, because it's world championship boxing. You've got to be able to push Chris back. And I could push him back. I'd done the first week on my own, 6 rounds a day. But I still drank every day. And I remember I managed to get up and do it. And a couple of times I took Ronnie Davies out with me. He went, "Andy, I don't know how you drink, man, and get up and do that." And I don't know how I did myself. But when Barry Earn come, I saw him with Barry Earn. And Barry Earn was a great guy. You know, he said, "You can take Chris Eubank's place at the top of the tree." His words, he said, "I'll make you a world champion and a multimillionaire." He says, "When Chris is ready to retire," he said, "sign with me." He said, I will, you know, make you a world champion."
Did he see the potential in
you? Yeah, because he watched me spar, see. You know, I mean, the first round, Chris Day throw a punch, because that's Eubank all over. He just stood back, expecting me to go at him. But I thought I stood back and didn't throw a punch either. Mm-hmm. So it was like stalemate. You know what I mean?
Did he know you were drinking at the time, though?
Nah. Since I've met up with Chris after the day now, anyway.
So nobody knew?
Nobody knew. It was only Ronnie what knew, Chris's trainer. Because I used to take him out with me, and he used to go, "Oh, I don't know how you're doing."
That's the boxing I remember, see, like Nigel Benn, Chris Eubank, Steve Collins, even Prince Nazim.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the fights I used to see, the entertainers, the showmen, the pure.
Yeah.
Now, boxing's more tactical. I don't know if it's probably always been, but when you've seen these... They were pure scrappers.
Yeah.
Just again.
It was hard sparring with Eubank because I've got to say the truth. Being a sparring partner is just worse than fighting him, because you're doing it every day.
Would he try and do harm to you?
Yeah, every day. I don't pull no punches. Like I do. I talk honestly. Chris Eubank was ruthless in sparring, right? And he tried to knock you out every day. And if he could have, he would have. You know what I mean? He would have. And he couldn't meet.
Is that the way sparring should be, though?
But it's the same. Nigel was the same. He was, you know, they'd hold back.
It's elite level, isn't it?
They'd hold back. Yeah, and when there's everybody's in the gym watching them, and you catch them a few times, you know what I mean? You know, they know them coming for you. But a couple of times, I used to hold back because, you know, I used to just do enough. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, I don't want to keep having, you know, pressure, uh-huh, pressure all the time. Sometimes you just do the sparring part of mentality and just flick your jab out and just move and just do it, like. But I had a couple of wars with a few of them as well. Calzacchi was the same as well. You know,
he was a great fighter.
Yeah, you know. But I sparred with everybody.
What was Calzacchi like?
Joe's great. I'm still in touch with Joe today. He's written the back of my book for me.
That's brilliant.
I'm still in touch with him. We've been mates ever since. I've got friends with his dad. We're still mates today, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He texted me the other day when he lost his parents and stuff like that, you know.
And he
wished me all my best on my new path in life and stuff like that,
good.
You know what I mean? But sparring Joe was, you know, because he was a southpaw and so fast hands in. I'll tell you, he don't slap. He eats hard, man.
See, I think Joe's one of the greatest boxers of all time.
Yeah, I
don't think he gets the recognition that he deserves. I think people who know boxing will agree, but...
Yeah.
The thoughts that he fought and the way he won them, it didn't look like a typical...
His style was so hard.
Yeah.
You know.
Tough man.
Yeah, hard. His style was awkward because of his southpaw stance as well. And he's so fast. You're like looking around and it's like, boom, boom, boom. You know.
What was it, 42-0?
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, good
phenomenal
job. But, you know, there's that many I sparred with. I think I went toe-to-toe with about 11 or 12 world champions. And then there's like the likes of Errol Graham, Uday Mick world champion, Henry Wharton, the chap from Leeds, who's a good fighter, who boxed Ben and Eubank for the world title. I had some wars with him, sparring for his world titles. There's loads. I absolutely sparred and fought everybody.
Yeah. You know, what was your training like when you were on the booze as well? Were you training or were you just sparring?
I trained hard. You know, I mean, I remember coming from I sparred in 7 Odker, the world champion, and I come from Germany and I went straight to Tenerife to spar with Henry Wharton. But I was out every night, down the strip, Veronica's strip and everything.
What were you drinking?
I'd just drink anything, man.
Pints, yeah, vodka?
Yeah, I'd start with a few pints and then I'd go on to Bacardi and Coke, vodka and stuff like that.
In the book, I think it says you drank 14 bottles of Jack D.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
In 4 days?
Yeah, that was my worst out of my height of my addiction.
What was that?
While I was boxing, I was able to control the drink.
Hide that sweat a lot out.
Yeah, I'd get up and run every morning. I remember when I sparred with Eubank, I'd get up in the morning, run up to the pier, which was 2 miles, because I'd been up in my car and timed it, and I'd run back and get all my sweat gear on, and then I'd have breakfast and just have a rest and then get ready for three, because Eubank's always trained at 3 o'clock. But I did it everywhere. I went all over Germany. I went everywhere. I went Marcus Bayer, everybody, you know, Rudka May. I sparred everywhere. I sparred everybody and everyone. And I just used to turn up. They used to phone me up and say, there's a sparring job for you in Germany. Sevenodka, Marcus Bayer, Rudka May, to the Cologne box camp. You know, I'll say, yeah, okay, how much? Okay, book me a flight, I'm off. If I was fit or not, that make no difference.
How far do you think your career would have went, Andy, if you were off the booze?
I don't know, really, because in sight, anybody could say that. But I do believe Barry Ayer would have made me a world champion, because, you know, he's got the pull. He had the pull. But he done his end of the deal, but I never done mine, because I carried on my lifestyle. Just
When did people start seeing the effects of your drinking?
Well, when you're getting older, ain't it? When you ain't the same, am you? You know,
angry, frustrated.
Yeah, you know,
everything that comes with it.
Yeah, but. It took me quite some time to become an alcoholic. So I was just a binge drinker at first, you know. But as the time went on, that's what I become, to be honest.
Yeah. And that just became every day.
Yeah.
Did your dad and that start seeing things, changes?
Yeah, my dad tried everything to stop me drinking. He even come down my house once and locked me in the house. He said, you ain't going out this house no more to go and get a drink. And as soon as his back was turned, I just jumped out, climbed up, went upstairs into the bedroom window, jumped out the bedroom window with no shoes and socks on, just to go and get a drink.
Yeah, it's an addict. We can get whatever we want, no matter where we are, no matter what time. We sniff anything out.
That was, he couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe, like, his son, because I'd gone from, like, being a local hero, always on the back page of the paper for my boxing, I'd gone from being a local hero to being a local drunk. You know, and then the trouble followed me, you know, because every time I went out and had a drink, I was locked up or I was in trouble.
Getting in jail?
Yeah. I went to prison 3 times, but I was getting locked up on a Friday night, then having to go in court on a Monday morning, locked up all weekend, and that used to piss me off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, you're locked up in court Monday morning, and that happened, all the while.
Did you ever try and stop?
I tried everything. I managed to have some sobriety and stuff like that, you know, and I did try to beat my addictions myself, and I could put it down for periods of time, but then I always picked it back up, and then every time I picked it back up, it could last for a week, it could last for 2 weeks, when I drink every day. It could last for 3 weeks, it could last for a month, you know, where I just couldn't get enough. And I turned into the sort of alcoholic where the only way I used to stop was when my body used to stop me, when I physically couldn't take another drink, you know, and that's how bad it was.
Yeah, blackout, yeah. Kind of mentality.
I wore out, you know, I wasn't, there was no fun in it, you know, I'd just be sitting in a room isolating. I remember being sick into a pint glass, just pure vodka, and just drinking the sick, because it was just pure vodka, you know. And some of the things were happened to me from, like, you know, being a world class fighter. You know, it was terrible. You know, I mean, you know, it was horrendous. Some of the things, you know, like I said, I'd gone from being a local hero to a local drunk in a short space of time. Yeah, and it was you know, for everybody who knew me, knew the guy that I was. You know, it was heart-wrenching, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know.
It's tough, man, especially looking back and talking about it, you think, fuck me, but you're out the other side, brother.
Yeah.
You're in a good place, you're 5 months sober.
Nobody sets out to become an alcoholic. You know, I don't believe anybody's born an alcoholic. The reason I became an alcoholic is because I kept on drinking, you know. And then when your body's had a physical and a psychological change, there's no operation or anything what can put it right. Because you have a chemical imbalance and it sets a chemical off called acetone. And that acetone he just triggers it all off and you can't stop. And the only way I used to stop is that it used to stop me, you know. That's what used to happen to me.
Did you ever get counselling or anything?
Yeah, I used to have a counselling, a bloke named Simon Hunt.
Who was he?
Yeah, he was a good guy. He tried everything, you know, he tried everything. But some of the things, you know, was enough to make you stop, like by getting stabbed, you know. I mean, I went to Tenerife and I broke me back, you know, I fell through a roof and broke me back and I got stranded there. And I had all sorts of things happen to me. I got run over, I smashed my head open and I just lay on the floor, just blood all just coming out, you know. And you think that was enough, that I got run over, lost my driving license, you know, everything, smashed my cars up, you know, got out and run off. All sorts of crazy things happened to me. You think that'd be enough. You think, well, the writing's on the wall now, you've got to stop. But I couldn't. You know, I couldn't. And me being a tough bloke, being able to fight all the world champions and do everything, you know, nothing's too tough for me. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it in my own strength. They said to me, go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did, you know, because I was willing to try anything. I was willing to go to any lengths to get out of the mess what I was in, because I didn't like what I'd become, do you know. And I'd had everything, and everything was just leaving me and going.
So you started to identify that you had a problem?
Yeah, I tried everything.
What age were you then?
I was in my 30s then, you know. By the time I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd stopped boxing professionally myself, and I started doing shows with Spencer Brown and all them from the EBF and that Gold Star and that, and I started doing stuff like that. But I was still battling, man. I was battling it every time. I mean, I'd done an exhibition fight with Nigel Benn when I was 42, and he's a couple of years older than me. And all the build-up to it, I just drank every day and sniffed every day, all the build-up to it. I had 2 days off the drink, and I went to the middle of the ring with Nigel Benn, and somebody had been spreading rumours that I was going to try and knock him out. And I went to the middle of the ring with him, like, and we're face-to-face. Like, it was only supposed to be an exhibition. And he said, I've heard everything you've said about me. You know what I mean? I thought, oh, right, here we go now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he come out blazing, non-stop, giving me everything he got. You know what I mean? But you'll have to read the book and find out what happened. he ended up on the floor himself. Yeah,
he was tough. I hear he's a good guy as well. Yeah, he's had a tough life.
He's a born-again Christian as well.
He's had a tough life. Yeah. So when you're working through it then in your 30s, you realise, I believe... Senior, I've got addiction problems, you want to quit every day, but we've got too much pride where you think you can do it yourself, you think I'm not that bad, you look at other people and go, I'm not as bad as them, but we're all in the same boat, no matter what addiction it is, no matter if it's overeating, drink, drugs, we all kind of want, as human beings we know what's right from wrong, but sometimes we get so disconnected that...
I had an addiction to cocaine as well, and crack, and speed. I tried everything else, you know, everything else. I'd stop drinking for periods of time and then I'd just take speed.
Replace it with something else.
I'd replace one addiction for another. And I thought, I'm all right, this ain't so bad, you know. And then I'd do the cocaine. I couldn't get enough cocaine down me. Because once you've had your first few things, you take, they're the same. You're always chasing it. And the crack was the same. I used to spend $1,000 a day on crack. And
How were you getting the money?
I'd got money. You know what I mean?
You had money at the
time? I'd got money. I bought my own house when I was 22. I paid for it cash. You know what I mean? I got my dad worked in the scrap business. Mm-hmm. We got horses. You know, we do trotting racing. You know what I mean? We do all sorts of stuff like that. You know, I was always all right for money.
Are you travellers?
Nah, my brother lives on a gypsy site. My brother does. We're not travellers. But, I've always been all right like that, you know. But, the addiction side of it, you know, I just kept trying and trying everything myself.
What were you trying to block out, Andy?
Well, I wasn't trying to block anything out, you know. I was just, you know, it started off as just something that I liked. And then me with my addictive nature, which is what I've got, you know, I just like the taste of it.
So it just started off as a bit of fun, thinking, this is good, part of lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah,
and then bang.
Yeah. I really did think I'd be world champion as well, but, you know, but I thought I could do well, I thought I could do both and drink as well, and obviously.
Yeah. Were you still sparring with people on the crack, coke?
Nah, not drugs. When I was on the hard drugs. I went to Lanzarote when I was 40 and sparred with a Spanish super middleweight champion, and I was battling the drink then, bad. I was battling the drink bad. I managed to do it, but I was battling the drink bad. I was drunk bad every night, and I was 40 then, you know. And he was a young lad, only 25, and he was good kid, you know what I mean, and I was 40, you know, and doing 6-8 rounds a day and heavy drinking of the night as well. You know, I wore like in my 20s and 30s like I used to be. I was struggling, you know, and that was my last sparring job. Then I'd take no more after that. You know what I mean? I'd take no more.
Enough.
Yeah. But, like, I'd done the exhibition fight when I was 42 with Ben, but that was the same. You know, I was just battling all the while, battling. And then once I'd done that, I was just, it just progressed. Alcoholism and drug addiction and everything is a progressive illness. Mm-hmm. You know, it just progressed. And I kept trying to thinking, I can do it myself. I can do it myself, you know. And I remember once doing it by me, in my own strength, doing 6 months, and I thought, I've cracked it. I'm all right now, you know what I mean? And then that little man come on my shoulder and says, have a drink. And I thought, oh yeah, I'll try one, you know. And obviously that drink lasted for weeks, you know what I mean? Weeks and weeks. All the good work I'd done, knocked it all down, yeah. You know what I mean? All, you know, everything.
And that, you feel like a failure again, and then you start lying to people again, and it's like back to square one, so you just may as well fucking keep drinking.
Yeah, and it won't have fun for me. I was in hell, I mean, the thing on the front of my book, A Boxer's Journey from Hell to Christianity, is the truth. You know, I was in living hell. I used to see things, I used to hallucinate, I used to be that bad, I used to be that scared. I mean, a tough bloke like me, I used to be scared to go out of the house for 2 weeks till I'd recovered. It used to strip me of everything. I used to be stuck in the same clothes, unshaven, unwashed, couldn't do anything. I used to be stuck like that for 2 weeks in a right mess. You know, I'd piss myself, I'd shit myself, I couldn't do anything. You know, I was just a
central nervous system. Yeah,
I was just a physical wreck. Yeah. You know, and if anybody would have seen me then, they wouldn't believe you.
Like, what age were you then, Andy?
I was in my 40s then. You know,
what height was the drugs, the crack in, 40s, in your 40s?
I went to prison in 2011, and I thought it was a joke, like, because of drinking and that. And I come out of prison, I just went straight to the pub. In no time at all, I was back in prison again.
How long were you in prison for?
Only 3 months, you know what I mean? It wasn't long, but, you know.
Were you drinking in prison?
No, I could have drank. I could have had some hooch and all that. Yeah. But I never did. You know, I never did. I kept thinking, I'm gonna try and, you know. But that's the thing for me. I did know I'd got a problem, and I did keep trying. I took some drugs in jail and stuff like that, some Subutex and some other stuff. You know what I mean? You know, but a day I know drink, because I knew drink was me poison. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then when I come out, I went to prison 3 times, and I come out in 2013. I thought, man, I've got to do something about this. You know what I mean? I've got to do something about this. Because, like, I'd had everything. You know, I was well off. I'd got properties abroad. I'd got houses. I bought a property in Bulgaria. I bought a property in Turkey to investments. You know, I'd got, you know, I'd done all right. And everything was just going. You know what I mean? And it did. You know what I mean? It did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but I carried on with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was in and out of the rooms of AA for years. You know, but I sat in the rooms, I got my arse on the seat, and people says, just get there and your head will follow. But I can truthfully tell you, I don't like going to the meetings, and I don't like being labelled an alcoholic from being a, you know, a tough bloke and a world-class fighter. But you know what, I knew I'd got to do something, and I couldn't do it on my own, you know. And these, it's Alcoholics Anonymous, it talked about a higher power, and I thought, fucking hell, what's that about? I don't get going to get that, you know what I mean? I thought, I'll just do it myself, you know. And they told me I'd got to be honest in Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought, fuck it, I'm going to get honest. I've never been honest in my life. You know, and you've got to do this and you've got to do that and you've got to get on the programme. And I thought, fuck it, I ain't going to do that. You know what I mean? I thought, I'll just do it my own way, you know. Yeah. I thought, I'll do it my own way. I got phone numbers and of other alcoholics.
Sponsors?
Yeah, and stuff like that. I waited a bit of time to pick my own sponsor. Because to get a good sponsor, you need somebody who's been through it, who's got lung sobriety, and who talks a good story.
Yeah.
And I did got myself a good sponsor named Paul. He was like 18 years sober. And... you know, he'd been in All Saints in the Nut House for his drinking and all that. So he'd, you know, his story was powerful. And I thought, I'll ask Paul. And I asked Paul. And I've still got the same sponsor today. And he's you know, I'd like to say that he helped me a really lot.
Yeah,
he did help me a lot as well.
Yeah, but the first step is you helped yourself. You admitted that you wanted a problem and you stuck to the plan.
Yeah.
And that's where you got your results. And yeah. It can be difficult because, like you say, when you first get in there, world-class fighter, thinking, fuck this, man. You look at people as if they're weak, but we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Some of these guys are in these meetings for 20, 30, 40 years.
I know, yeah.
Which is consistency to keep bettering their life, and these men give back to other people to help bring them up.
Well, I did all that as well. You know, I sort of done AA service because it was suggested to do, and I was, you know, I was willing. That's why I believe I'm like sober today, because I tried everything. You know, and when they says you've got to do some AA service, and I sponsored other people, and I went in schools and talked, and I done, you know, just for AA.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I went in the prisons just for AA, you know, and because I was trying to help myself as well, you know what I mean? And I was at the stage where, you know, I was trying to do everything what was suggested to me. So, you know, because I kept thinking I could do it on my own, but I kept failing. You know, I keep failing. I'd have a bit of sobriety, then I'd fail. Bit of sobriety, fail. Then every failure was like a breakdown. You know, it was like a breakdown. I was absolutely battered. You know, really, really battered.
So this became your biggest fight?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, it took me to hell, man. You know, I tried to commit suicide because I wanted out.
How many times?
Well, I've had so many death experiences, but the one time I tried to commit suicide was because I couldn't see my children and everything else, and I was just drinking to cloud everything. And I, you know, and like I said, having everything and everything losing everything, and what you'd become in your mind, and then your mind starts playing tricks with you. And when you're continuously boozing day in, day out, week after week, you know, it does something to your brain. You know, you ain't right, you know. And I'd had enough. I'd really had enough. I'd got to the point where I wanted out, you know. I was in my girlfriend's house, Angela. I'd met Angela, and, you know, I just took enough tablets to kill an elephant, to be honest. And something told her, like, you know, that to go and check on me, you know. And when they come and checked on me, I was passed out, and they found an ambulance and took me to the hospital. They pumped a solution into my arm, what saved my life probably, you know. But even then, I see the crisis team and stuff like that. And you know what? When I see the crisis team, they said, there's people in this hospital with worse problems than you. And that just fucking knocked me sideways, you know. Because I thought, you know, I was in such a bad, dark place, you know. My mum and dad was there, and Angela was there, and I was just broken, alcoholic, drunken, shivering mess.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's the thing, it's not just the misery we give ourselves, it's the misery everyone around us would cause.
Exactly. My mum and we made my mum ill, man. You know what I mean? But, you know,
because you know yourself, people can't change unless they want to change themselves.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It must be difficult for her to be not want to leave them or want to walk away, because you know they've got potential, they know they've got greatness in them, and it can be difficult because we don't just kill ourselves, but we kill everybody who's trying to support us.
Yeah.
We see them
not
as a threat, but any addict manipulates every situation, you become a compulsive liar and a great actor as well. But the people who stick around and never leave you, they're the special ones.
That's what Angela did. You know, she stuck by me, and I could see that I was a good guy, and I could see, like,
I was just a bit lost.
I was trying.
Yeah.
You know, I was trying, and but even when I come out of the hospital after trying to commit suicide, I went and got a drink and started again, within an hour of coming out of the hospital. That's how bad I was. You know, you'd think you had enough, ain't you? You stop. The writing's on the wall, stop. But I couldn't. I went straight to, got me some cans and started drinking again.
So what was that moment then? You decided to really go for it and really make changes in your life?
I kept trying. You know, I kept trying. But that's why, that's why I put my success down to God, because I'd do it. But God knew I was trying, you know. I mean, and then the time, I had so many things happen to me. I mean, the one time, I went to Bulgaria and I fell over and I just smashed my head off the toilet. and Angela saved my life then. I just lay on the floor and the blood just pouring out, and I couldn't get no signal on the phone because it was in Bulgaria, and I just had to hold my head together for 8 hours while I was just passed out on the floor, you know. I just bled to death, you know what I mean? There's that many things, but I kept trying, you know, and I don't know what else to do, and I kept trying. And then this one particular night again, Angela was that worried because I'd been drinking heavily. I went to a boxing show. I managed to get some sobriety, only when I made myself bad that I stop, you know, and then I'd get a few weeks sobriety and then I'd have a drink again and then I'd start again. And this went on for quite a long time. But I went to this, my last drink, I went to a boxing event at Cannock, and, you know, somebody pushed a drink my way, and I'd been off the drink a little bit of time. I got a bit of sobriety, and I thought, oh, you know, and I drank it, and I thought, I'll only have a couple. And it was horrendous. I made a show of myself, you know, in front of my fellow boxers who, you know, who got respect for me and stuff like that. You know, it was embarrassing, you know, and I couldn't wait to get me home. And that was terrible. And then I was just isolated, just stuck in a room, just isolated, drinking bottle after bottle again, you know. This is my last drink, this was. And then I was such in a mess. I don't know what to do. I thought I was going to die. I really did. I looked that bad, and I thought I was going to die. And I found, I'd started a couple of times, because AA had spoke about a higher power, I'd started going, popping in a church to try and find some answers, you know, expecting a big bolt of lightning to hit me, but it never did, you know. But and Angela didn't know what to do, and so I got friends with a man named John Crampton, and I found him, and he says, what can I do? He's going to die. And they come, and they brought the pastor of the church. I'd only just started going, you know, just to try and find answers, because I had said higher power. And man, it was horrendous, man. I can still picture it, like, I still feel the pain I was in. And I found them, and they come and prayed for me. And they said they could feel, you know, the presence of death on me. And then when they left, I was, you know, I was like just moping about and just sort of fucking, you know, I'm like, you know, give us a drink and that. And then just something just happened to me. I just dropped on the floor on my hands and knees, and I says, God, if you're real, I said, if you are real, I said, can you take my addiction away from me? I said, I'll follow you for the rest of my life. And then I had like a spiritual awakening where I felt the presence of God. And I never had another drink again.
Proud of you, brother.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely proud of you. And for
sorry I get upset.
Yeah, you know, that's, man, okay. Listen, you know, it's natural. I cry all the time.
You know what I mean? But it's the truth. And and then that was on the 28th of October 2015. And I got baptised the 15th of November, just not long after. And then since I've done that, my life has changed so much. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never wanted a drink, nor a drug. You know, I'm honest. I don't do anything wrong. You know, I'll just help others.
And that's a great place to be. And that's for anybody that's watching and struggling themselves. You know, no matter if you're addicted to crack, Valium, alcohol, if you're burning out of prison all your life, no matter your past, no matter your age, people can change.
You know, that's what happened to me. And then once I got baptised, I just went from strength to strength. You know, I had it tattooed on my arm, 2 Corinthians 5:17-18.
Yeah.
I'm a new creation. The old is gone. The new is here. And that's, that, you know, on the book come about, is Angela bought me a journal. I don't even know if I was going to write. I'm going to write a book.
Where can people get your book, Andy?
It's on Amazon.
The links in the description and stuff.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's only under a tenner, and it's like free postage package. But if anybody wants a book, you know, or they want to contact me, or if anybody, if any alcoholics listening who need help, I'll send you a book for free, because that's what I do. Mm-hmm. You know, I've sent hundreds of books into Pentville Prison and Featherstone and everything. I mean, you know, on cost, you know what I mean, to help addicts. But if anybody, you know, it's on Amazon anyway. But and then I've just gone from strength to strength, to be honest. And I only started writing that book as to try and self help myself. She Angela, she just says, "You're not this man."
First of all, shout out to Angela for sticking by him, by the way, because anybody would have fucking ran a mile after the first weekend or first sign of anybody with addictions.
But she's the reason this book's here, mm-hmm. you know, because she just bought a journal and without no intention about a book or anything, she said, "Just start writing some things of the world champions you've been in the ring with," because I've been in the ring with everybody, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And it says, "You're not this man." I said, "You're not this man." I said, "Just start writing to self-help yourself. You know, it's got psychology, ain't it?" Some, I said, you know. And I started writing it, and I started putting some names down. And the feeling of me writing them names down, I started to feel how I was when I was fighting them, when I was sparring them and that. And I started to get a bit better and a bit better. And then I managed to put it into work. I wrote the book myself with a pen and paper, and I have nobody, no help, no nothing. You know what I mean? I wrote that myself, broken, addicted, crying sometimes, you know what I mean? And I got my scrapbooks out from my boxing career and stuff like that. And that's how the book came about. So, you know.
Therapy for you then?
Pardon?
Was it therapy for you? Writing your book, putting it all
in
paper?
Yes, of course it was,
just bringing back a lot of emotions and releasing
but
them?
But don't get me wrong, I still kept slipping a little bit, you know, here and there. I'd get sober, then write the book. I'd already started writing, like, notes in the journal because Angela had told me to. You know, she was the one who was trying to get me to self-help myself, like you said. It did work, mm-hmm. you know, because when I was writing it, I was taking myself back to how I was and how strong and fit and, you know, and how I was like. And, you know, instead of being a shivering wreck in that dark place.
Because we hide it all, we bottle it all. Well, Andy, the best thing to do is accept the pain for you to release it. Write it down. Do you know what? Fuck it. That's it there. Burn that. Burn the piece of paper or whatever you need to do.
I still carried on with Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I started sponsoring people and helping people and stuff like that, you know. And like I said, you know, the primary purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous is to help another alcoholic achieve sobriety, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what I did, you know. But, you know, I've sponsored people today and, you know, I'm lucky today. I'm lucky to be set free. I mean, people say to me, "Don't you ever get an urge for a drink, Ann?" And I said, "Look, I said, when I ask God to remove my addiction, that's what he did. I don't even have an urge for a drink. It's totally gone. God did it for me." I said, "When I said to him, 'I will follow you for the rest of my life,' he knew I meant it. Because I've done loads of talks and stuff at community centres, churches, recovery groups and stuff. And they said, 'How come God answered you?' And I said, 'I've been praying for years and I haven't had a breakthrough.' And I said, 'Well, if you're still sitting on the fence,' I said, 'with your addiction,' I said, 'the only reason God answered me,' I said, 'because he knew I meant it. When I asked him, I said, 'I'll follow you for the rest of my life. If you take my addiction away,' he knew I meant it. I mean, that's why I was set free. And I said, and I say to everybody, if you get your heart right, I said, God will deliver you. You know, I said, because he delivered me. He delivered me for no other reason, only that I meant it. That I said I'd follow him for the rest of my life. And that's what I believe.
Do you feel blessed, Andy?
I feel totally blessed. Totally. Mm. I've got a new life. I've got a totally new life.
See the world differently?
Yeah, I look at everything differently. You know, I've just, like I said, a new creation.
What age are you?
50 now.
And you look fucking great, man.
I've got good shape, man.
Do you think you get another fight again?
I could have. Spencer Brown.
Angela was saying no.
Spencer Brown said about doing one with Roy Jones, but he never got back to me. But I would do.
I think Tyson. Yeah. Tyson looks phenomenal at 54.
Yeah.
Age is a number.
Yeah.
Sometimes people hit their prime, their 40s, their 50s. Yeah. I know guys in their 60s that run marathons.
Yeah.
Do you miss the fight, Andy?
Not really.
Nah,
I've got to be truthful. I still train and I train fighters and stuff like that. But I don't really miss the fighting. You know, fighting's hard work. You know what I mean? And when you've done as much as what I've had, and you've had as many bangs to the head as well. You know what I mean? When you've had over 100 amateur fights, lots of professional fights, and I had more fights in the gym. You know what I mean? Being a sparring partner for all the world champions. You know, I must have done 200 rounds with Chris Eubank, you know, or more, and all the others. It's a lot of punches hitting your head. So I wouldn't really want my head being knocked, normal.
Does that affect you, Andy, then, as well, when all the punches and shit?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But you're on the ball sometimes, but you speak to boxers and they're punched.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen it happen, because I've been around boxing all my life. There's people who haven't had as many fights as me and then punch drunk, you know, and they get dementia, they get Parkinson's, and then slowed right up, you know. And so, you know, I think over a certain age, and when you've had a lot, because it all depends on how many miles you've got on the clock, don't you? You know what I mean? You know, and I've got a lot of miles on the clock, and I don't really want my brain being rattled at this age. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And all the booze and the drugs and everything else. You know, I think I'll just.
But I believe everything repairs itself. I believe everything does repair itself. Yeah. I believe if you eat right, train hard. I believe the body is such a powerful thing in the brain.
My missus is a doctor, and they repaired me because I had liver damage, I had kidney damage. I do everything else, and you know, it does treatments. What repaired me? You know what I mean? Because you know, it does treatments from the feet. What's releases
reflexology?
It's a similar thing, but like it causes inner healing, and it causes your own body's mechanism to release inner healing.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what healed me.
I got Reiki yesterday before I came here, which is spiritual energy, healing energy.
Yeah, but. The body's own mechanism is the best way to heal itself, not tablets, you know. But I'm blessed. I feel great.
Do you still watch boxing and stuff?
Yeah,
now?
I'm still involved. Yeah, I've got lads are training and stuff like that. I put shows on, and you know, I'm still involved, and I still keep myself fit. And you know, and I'm still any young lads. You know, they're always asking me for advice and stuff like that. You know, but you know, I've just set my own ministry up. Jesus in my corner ministry, and I'm interested in helping people, and I'm setting that up. Like, you know, I've just become a registered charity. And, you know, and I'm going to do that. Like I said, I've just been on TBN, Gospel TV as well. And I'm just interested to see where that leads me.
Ah, good on you, man. You know. Do you know what I mean? As long as you find your passion, find your purpose, but doesn't matter what it is, as long as you're not hurting anyone.
Yeah, I went up to Edinburgh. I had done a talk up there. I had, eight people give their life to Christ. Oh. And, you know, and when I asked God to relieve me of my alcoholism, and I'll follow it for the rest of my life, that's what he did. So I'm going to stick to my end of the deal, you know, and that's what he did. You know, and I also write a follow-on book of where God's led me since that book. You know, like I said, I've written it myself, so I'll write another one myself. So, like, the journey, like, you know, everything what I've done since I've been sober and since I've set my ministry up, and the amount of people that I've helped, you know, I mean, that book has helped so many people. I've had so many comments and so many people saying, I bought the book, I've set free from alcoholism, I've set free from addiction, you know, and it's just helping everyone, you know what I mean? Because, you know, when you don't know no way out, you'll try anyway, will you?
Of course.
If you want to get out, any way you got to get out of it, you got to beat it, don't you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We got to, like I said with me, I was prepared to go to any lengths. I tried everything, you know what I mean? And to, you know, and that's why people have been, you know, asking me for the book. I mean, some addicts have phoned me up and said, I've got no money. I said, well, I'll send you a book free. You know what I mean? Because that's what we do. We give it back. There's more pleasure in giving than receiving.
The gift in life is giving. If you help someone else, it automatically feels good.
Yeah.
And it's free.
Yeah.
As long as you can help someone just with a chat or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Everything else is external. You know, but helping another human being is a beautiful thing.
I mean, I won't be here today if, like, Angela and people help me. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, I believe God works through people and put Angela in my life. And different things. You know, if I hadn't have had people help me, I wouldn't have made it at all.
Yeah, it's all synchronicity, and I believe we're all here for a purpose. Mm. Sometimes we've got to go to the darkest of places to find the light, and sometimes we're the fucking chosen ones to say, right, yous are going to have a fucked up past, but yous are going to come good in the end. But, and it's a beautiful thing.
If I'd probably been a world champion, I wouldn't be helping people today, and I probably wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? So,
dead,
you know,
do you think?
I wouldn't be here, no way. I wouldn't have lasted another 12 months, because the sessions of the drinking was... There was death.
There's a lot of pressures before a fight, Andy.
Not really.
Nah.
I could handle the pressure before fights. You know, I was all right. I wasn't bothered about anybody. I never feared nobody that much. But you know,
do you think a lot of boxers should have a lot of things in place for mental health and stuff? I know a lot of boxers who struggle.
Yeah, definitely, because there's stuff like that in place for footballers and stuff like that, aren't there? You know what I mean? But Barry McGuigan did start a professional boxers association thing once, you know, but he did carry on. He did carry on because, you know, a lot of fighters, they give their life to boxing, and then when it's over, there's nothing for them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Scott Harrison, who's a good friend of mine.
Great fighter.
He, and again, the alcohol. He's in a great place now. He actually just had a fight
and I'll follow
a couple
him.
Of weeks ago. And he's trying to get his book out, Scott, but addiction's a bad thing, and where it takes you, because you're a boxer or a fighter, people think he's a tough man. We're all fucking human beings. It don't mean
it don't matter how tough you are, mate, when addiction comes on you in the bad you know, it don't matter who you are, like I said, for me, just to be free of addiction is better than anything. No amount can buy that, for no amount of money, no amount of anything.
What about turning your book into a documentary or a film?
Well, I've had a few like people interested, but nothing's been set in stone yet. But it, you know, I'll just wait for it to happen if it comes. You know what I mean? But it could be. A few people have asked. A few people have mentioned it, and I'll just wait and see what happens. You know, because it could be. But it's all about helping people. That book's about helping people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Anybody who reads that book, he'll think, you know, he turned his life around. Mm-hmm. And he got set free, you know. And I know there's some harrowing moments in it a little bit, but
that's your journey.
Yeah. I kept a lot of things out. I couldn't put a lot of stuff in there. You know what I mean?
Back in the jail.
Yeah. Now there was lots of stuff I couldn't put in there. Yeah. I mean, you know. But I put together what I thought, you know.
Was enough, but then that's, you could do a follow up to the book.
Yeah. But it's. Just to be an author, he's all right. You know, like I said, I know ghostwriter. I'd written it all myself with a pen and paper, and that's an achievement on its own, you know. And I got my cousin to put it onto Microsoft Word, like in an email, and I sent it to a few publishers, and every one of them wanted it. They all offered me a deal.
Did you fight Steve Collins?
Nah, I never fought Steve.
But
he knew I was like Ben and Eubank's main sparring partner. Mm. And we've spoken a few times at a few shows and stuff like that. And he's always given me high regard because he always says fighters like us at that level. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But he's a good guy, Steve.
He was the first one to beat Eubank.
Yeah, but I think Steve was in the right place at the right time where Eubank had a lot of fights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Burned out, I think.
Yeah, he'd had a lot of fights. Mm-hmm. He's coming to the end. You know what I mean? But it's all about timing as well, boxing. Yeah.
What do you think of state of boxing now, though?
Boxing today? I watch it. You know, I watch it. I don't quite think it's as...
The 80s and 90s were the years, weren't they?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
That era was... That's why I remember boxing. My dad was a big boxing fan. Yeah. Used to do the boxing, and that's what I remember. Yeah. Those kind of guys, tough fights. I think now it's all business.
Yeah, there's not so many... not so many draws now as like there was then in the 90s. You know what I mean?
Too much business now. The big draws used to fight the big draws back then. But I love Big Tyson Fury. I think his story's phenomenal, and I believe he's one of the greatest heavyweights of all time if he beats Big Anthony Joshua. I just don't think the heavyweight division is as strong as it was
you look back at the heavyweights, you know, them are different. To say you're world heavyweight champion, like, you know, you look at the likes of, you know, Ali, Tyson, Lennox Lewis and stuff like that.
Holyfield.
Holyfield, you know. They're not like that, am they? Mm-hmm. To be honest. You know, no disrespect, but they're not.
I think so as well. You know. But it's still phenomenal to be at that level, but that era again, the 80s and 90s, that's what I remember. Yeah. Tough fights. Nobody hiding from anybody. Yeah. Money was always been there, but now it's all different promoters, different deals. And
when I was in Germany, there was an American guy there sparring with me. And his dad had fought Muhammad Ali, you know, and his dad was Zorro Foley. And this guy, he was over there sparring with a couple of the heavyweights over there, you know what I mean? And I took him out a few times and got him drunk, you know what I mean? But,
bad influence, Andy.
You know what I mean? But his dad fought Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, that's class, man.
Yeah, Zorro Foley, But... I remember him telling me about it. Yeah, man. Good memories.
So, through all the misery, the pain, finding some light, what's your plans for the future, Andy?
My plans for the future, I'm gonna grow my ministry, and I'm gonna reach as many people as I can. And I'm looking at opening a residential rehab with my partner, my fiance, Dr. Angela Quinn. So, like a Christian rehab. And it's all about helping people these days, you know, and you know, it's all about helping people. And also, like I said, I should write another follow-on book. But we're looking at opening a rehab for people with drink and drug problems, you know.
Mm. See, when you talk about it, I know it brings back a lot of emotion. What's your thought process now when you think about it? You kind of laugh off as well and kind of back when you talk about your story. Obviously, it brings back a lot of emotions. But do you ever laugh and go, fuck me, I was in a bad place?
No, I don't laugh about it. You can see the emotional in my face. Like, you know, it's serious, you know. But like I said, I'm glad to be free. But I don't laugh at it because I was in, you know, death was the only way out for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in so much pain and I couldn't, you know, I couldn't beat it myself. And, you know, whether people are religious or not, it makes no difference to me. That's what happened to me. You know what I mean? And then when I was doing, this is another story where I felt the presence of God. My sponsor, who I told you about, who got a good sponsor, doing the 12 steps of recovery. You've heard of the 12 steps.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I got on the 12 steps and got my sponsor to take me through the steps. And I got, you know, the main step, the main first step is the primary purpose is to admit that your life's unmanageable and, you know, you could have a drink and stuff like that. And, you know, and then I got to steps 4 and 5. And I had to write an inventory out of all the people that I'd harmed, you know. And don't forget, you know, I'd harmed some people, you know what I mean? I'd done some bad things, you know. I used to beat people up and do things and stuff like that, debt collecting and all sorts of stuff, you know. And with this inventory, I started writing it down and going through the steps, going through it. And when I was on steps 4 and 5, I had a spiritual awakening where I felt the presence of God again. And my sponsor said to me, he said, "You've just felt the presence of God, ain't you?" I said, "How did you know?" Because like I went, like euphoric feeling all come and rush over me. I went all hot and I went all funny. And he said, "I seen you." And he said, "Andy," he said, "God's just forgiven you for all the bad things you've done." He goes, "He's set you free." And I've had two spiritual awakenings, you know what I mean, where God has touched me both, you know. So I'm just blessed to be set free.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that to me, like I told you, is better than anything. Because I was gone, man. I was gone. I've been brought back to life.
Yeah. For anybody watching, Andy, that's maybe in the struggle, that's battling some sort of addiction, what advice would you have for them?
I'll tell them, don't suffer on your own, because a lot of people suffer on their own. I'd tell them to get in Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous helped me, you know. And I'd say, I'd recommend do everything you can. Get help, and I would say go to Jesus. He's only a prayer away, because I did. I asked God for help. He answered my prayer because he knew that I meant it, you know. And anybody who asks the Lord, Romans 10:13, anybody who calls on the name of the Lord, they shall be answered. But if you're on it, if you call trick him, you've got to be ready, you know. God's only a prayer away, and it's free. This is what I tell people. I say it's free. I say, but you've got to be honest and you've got to want it, you know what I mean? And that's what happened with me. You know, he knew I was ready. He knew I'd honour what I said. When I said, I'll follow you for the rest of my life, he knew I meant it. And I mean it with a passion. And that's why I've set my ministry up. I'm registered charity. I go around helping people. And that's my passion today.
Yeah.
And that's why I believed I was saved. You know, no other reason, because I was a goner. You know, I don't take no credit for it myself. I really don't. You know, I did keep trying, yeah, you know. But I couldn't do it myself. So only when I had that moment where I felt spiritual awakening, where I had the presence of God, and I never had another drink, then I got baptised, then I done my steps, then I had another spiritual awakening. And God works through people as well. He put Angela in my life. I wouldn't have made it without that lady there. No way, you know, no way, you know. And I'm just lucky, you know. Anybody who's struggling, give it all you got, man. Give it all you got, you know, because it kills you otherwise, you know. If you can suffer on your own, you won't do it. You need help.
Being a prime example, Andy, people can change. You can better your life.
Yeah, yeah. And to be, and just to be the way I am today, I mean, I was never honest. I was never anything. I was always a criminal sort of thing. I dealt in all sorts of stuff. You know what I mean? And just to live a normal life, just normal, honest, good life. I turn away from my past, my criminal past. I ain't proud of anything like that, what I did. I don't think it's big or anything like that. All the stuff that I used to do, all the criminal activity that I used to do, I don't think that's good. I like having peace in my mind, peace in my heart, and knowing, sitting right in my head today, and sitting right with God, Yeah. You know, he gave me a new life. Man, I'm going to honour everything I said to him. I said, I'm going to follow you for the rest of my life. And I want to make as many disciples to Christ as I can. You know, I work for his kingdom now. I don't work for myself.
You know, all the shit you've done in the past, as much as you don't like it, if you never done it, you wouldn't be where you are today. You wouldn't be helping others, showing them not to go down the same route you went down. So, it is what it is, mate. We all make mistakes. We're human beings. You're going to continue to make mistakes. I'm going to continue to make mistakes. But as long as we can learn from them, as long as we don't slip back into the old characters.
About learning, ain't it? It's a learning curve, ain't it?
Exactly.
You
know. No matter if you have a belief in Christ or a belief in some sort of higher power, whatever it is.
I agree.
If it's keeping you on a good path and being true to you, honesty is key.
I mean, some people come in the meetings and they don't believe in God, they don't believe in anything like it, and we say, that's fine. And some people just have the meetings as the higher power, you know what I mean? Some people, it works for them, you know, and it works. But my story, that's what worked for me, you know what I mean? But, you know, I'll just say to anybody, you know, put everything you got into it, because it won't go away on its own, you know what I mean? Put everything you got into it. If you've got alcohol problems, addiction problems, anything, you got to, like you said, address the problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah, face it head on, because it ain't going to go away. No. You can block it out, but when you block it out, you just want more drink or drugs to numb it out. Mm. But you've got to face it head on. No matter what 12-step program it is, no matter if it's picking up the phone and even asking someone who's been to a 12-step program for advice, there's people out there that want to help. There's people out there that want to better your life. But first of all, you must better your life.
Yeah.
The guidance is there. So, Andy, for coming on today, brother, and telling your story. Also, people will get Andy's book. I'll leave the link in the description. And I look forward to the follow-up. But would you like to finish up on it, Andy?
I just want to... Can I just say a little prayer?
Of course you can.
I just want to pray for everybody who's listening. I just want to pray for James to continue his good work. And I just want to pray for all the listeners. And I just want to pray for anybody who's got addiction problems in any form, that they get something from this today. And I just want to give all the glory to God for me being here today, because I was, you know, I was a sinner, I was lost and I was gone. And I give Jesus all the glory. So thanks for having me. Amen.
Thank you, brother. Amen. See you soon. Okay. Keep fighting. You can also watch my podcast on my YouTube channel. The link is in the bio if you'd like to subscribe. You can follow me on my social media platforms to see who my next guest is. Follow me on Facebook at JamesEnglish11, Twitter, JamesEnglish0, Instagram, JamesEnglish2. You can also download these podcasts on iTunes or Spotify.